Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm writing this story about a listener question, a reader question from Patrick, who asked about pushing Mac notifications to an Apple Watch. And mm-hmm. I tested a couple of things out, because you got to use Growl, basically, and you got to use an app that can receive Growl notifications, which means
Prowl?
It has to have a plugin, so you have to use Prowl. So I got that set, because I also looked at Boxcar, which is what I used to use, but Boxcar is like...
dead.
Well, it's around, but I couldn't... I would press the button and nothing would happen, and then like several hours later, I would get the message would come through Boxcar, and I'm like...
That's just what you're looking for.
And when I press the preview button in Prowl, it pops up within seconds on my phone and my watch, which is great. And then I went and attached it to some app notifications on my Mac and said, when these things happen, set that to Prowl, and none of them send anything.
Amazing. That's
so
technology for you.
It can totally send from the test message, I guess, but it seems to not... I'm not quite sure. Now, it seems like I'm getting them... The app itself is only showing the previews. So it's like the ones that are not coming from the preview button that are actually coming, like, supposed to be triggered by app things... aren't triggering, which means it doesn't work, which is frustrating because it looks like it should work. But it doesn't.
So, I played around with this, I don't know, probably a couple of years ago. And I think at that point, my conclusion was mainly, I actually don't need this. But it is an interesting question.
The last thing that I did that I used it for was like downloads completed.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
like
sure.
if you have a download or a filing code that completes and you've walked away. But this was, that was nice, right? You get a little buzz and it's like, oh, my Mac is done with its thing. And I don't know why this isn't a feature, right?
Sure.
I don't know. I think this is this makes a lot of sense, right? Shouldn't your Mac, whether it's on the same network or not, shouldn't your Mac be able to notify you somewhere else that something happened? Like extend the notification center? That actually would be a really nice piece we should do. That is a wish list piece about extending notification center, because this is not great. You know, you buy a $4 app here and a $3 app there, and then as far as I can tell, it doesn't actually work.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kludge.
Because Notification Center just doesn't do it.
Yeah, there's no... Because it's easy enough to pipe things to Notification Center, but how do you handle getting stuff out of Notification Center? Yeah. I don't think there's a hook for that in AppleScript or Automator or anything like that.
No, I mean, there's no way to send sort of like an email or something like that, which you could do, but that's not fun. You could do that.
No,
I suppose I could have it email me and then I'll get a note saying, oh, you got this email about your download finishing.
Almost better to hack it into like messages or something, but I don't even know if you can do that easily.
Right. Something like where you're sending a message to yourself? I mean,
yeah,
that's the other
thing.
You
have to, which is also kind of a mess. Agreed. It seems like it would be much easier if that was a built-in feature of Notification Center, was simply, you know, hey, I want to set up a rule. I can see why Apple, it's just another one of those things that kind of falls by the wayside, where it's like, that probably is useful to a percentage of people. It's probably a fairly small percentage. But, I mean, may not be insignificant, but it may be, you know, 20% rather than, say, 70%. And... I think the reason I decided eventually that it was not something I needed, and I was using it for something very similar to you, is downloads, is that A, the number of those tasks has diminished greatly, and especially the number of things that happen on my Mac that are critical and that I need to know about right now is much lower now that I have an iPhone in my pocket all the time.
Right, that's true. I realized that most of the examples I was thinking of are things that I could just get notified by. Like, you look at Growl, and it's like, Growl will tell you if something happens with... It's like, I have an app for that.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't need my Mac to tell me these things, right? But there's occasionally a job... I mean, Patrick's example was... video encode. Like I do a Final Cut Pro export and leave my iMac, and I'd like to get noted when I'm out when it's done, I'd like to know, oh, okay, the export is finished. I can come back and do the rest of my job. And I like that idea. And,
sure.
And, you know, maybe there's something there, but it feels like everything is going to be kind of a hack, and that the best way to do it would be to just build it into Notification Center, like the ability to notify mm-hmm. all your devices. You basically send a self notification to your, you know, your Apple ID from yourself on all your devices that says this thing happened.
From the future.
Interesting.
Your video yeah. encode will be done.
That would be nice, because otherwise, you know, you're buying an app, and then you're buying another app, and you're trying to wire them together. And I don't know. I guess people should not expect to see this story on Six Colors at the rate I'm going. But maybe that other story instead as a wish list item, because, yeah, this is totally supposed to work, and it doesn't work.
Disappointing.
Sigh.
No.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why the preview works great though. So if you want to buzz your phone or watch from your Mac, just get this all set up and then press the preview button.
And
that works
you're
great.
Oh, so what you really need to do is write an automator that then triggers the preview button.
Yeah, it launches a growl and presses the right tab and presses the preview button, and then you'll get a thing on your watch that says preview. This is
but
a preview.
You'll know whatever task that you set up is now done.
Oh, totally. Yeah. How could you not know?
Well, I mean, how many tasks are you really setting this up for? I love that idea. That is the, like, maybe we should start a new feature of like stupid kludges where it's like, oh yes, I wrote an Apple script that opens this other app and presses a button so that I can notify myself.
I was thinking of that. I mean, you just wrote a thing that just posted about turning on your Xbox, but I had something similar to that, which is when we do these podcasts that stream live, like Incomparable or Clockwise, the ones that I'm streaming live. You know, every time I do that, I have to launch, like, I have to open the live stream page. I have to push some buttons in the CMS of either podcast network. I have to launch the IRC client. I have to launch the streaming audio client. I have to open Skype. I have to click all these buttons and launch all these apps. And I actually have somewhere, I haven't finished it yet, I have a draft of like an Apple script or an automator. I think it's not an automator, actually. I think it's an Apple script. And I might redo it in Keyboard Maestro. I don't know. But the idea is just tell it to do the thing, and then it does all the things for you. And that's so stupid. And yet, because it's just like launching apps and clicking buttons. And yet, when you have to do 15 of them in order to perform a task or start performing a task, I'd kind of like to automate that. I'd kind of like to make that easier.
Setting up your workspace, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I agree with that.
It needs to be set that way a couple times a week.
I have about 17 times tried to start out on writing an automator action or Apple script to do file processing for podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I fail pretty quickly.
I've talked to you and Marco
both about it, because I know you guys both have your own solutions for that. The problem always being it's more of a like, well, everyone's got their own setup, right? Like nobody has written an app that like genericizes this.
Right.
It's like everybody's got their own kludge and everybody or their own script and whatever. And it works, you know, to their setup, but everybody's setup is a little bit different. So like, well, you can definitely spend some time hacking those things and trying to make them work the way you want them to work. And sometimes the answer is, wow, I really wish there were an app that did this.
Right. Sometimes it's kind of beyond your skill level. Other times it's just the amount of time you would put into it. It's hard to see getting that time out of it. I do a lot of adapting of Marco stuff, Marco Arment, because he poked around in MPlayer and, which is a command line app, but he's got this crazy set of command line things that will basically convert things, or lame for MP3, and convert things into the right formats. And he passed on all of his sort of scripts and command line commands that he uses to me, and then I rebuilt them differently, but using his as a template for my workflow. So I actually just did this week. I did that where now I used to have a recorder file, like a call recorder file. After we're done with this Skype broadcast, I'll end up with that, and it's a QuickTime file. It's got two tracks, you and me. And I made a thing now. It used to be I have to drag and drop it into the Split Tracks app that comes with Call Recorder, and then I have to convert both of those, and then I'd rename them and I put them in the right folder in the projects that I have set up. And now I as of this week have a thing where I can just sort of right click on the Call Recorder file and say do the thing with the Call Recorder file, and it splits it, converts it, names it right, and puts it in the right place. And that's pretty awesome. But it,
yeah,
you know, it did take me 45 minutes to figure that out. Over the long run, will it save me? Yeah, I think it'll save me time, and certainly it'll just save me from just the drudgery of sitting there going click, drag, click, rename, you know, all of that. But
I mean, I've gotten very good at all those things, but they still take time.
Oh yeah, and that's the great question whenever you're trying to automate any task. I know that if you listen to Mac Power users, they talk about it a lot, you know, whether it's something like Text Expander or something like Keyboard Maestro, this idea, and Keyboard Maestro does some crazy stuff that I had no idea it did, like you know, being able to specify to click on a very particular item on a page somewhere, right, like down to like look for this graphic and click on it. Hmm. just great stuff. I've only tiptoed in, that's not the right phrase. I only dipped my toe in. There you go.
Your toe to the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly, and it stuck because it was ice. Into Keyboard Maestro. But you know, just all these tasks can be saved. I saw somebody on Twitter the other week who was complaining about regular expressions and like you could, and literally said, you'll never. You know, I will never save enough time learning using regular expressions to learn them. And I actually replied because it was somebody who followed me and they knew who I was. And I said, I totally disagree. I use them all the time. I'm glad I learned them, you know, 15 years ago, just because I use them all the time and they save me huge amounts of time when I do. But this is the great conundrum, is it really going to be worth my time, and do I have the time to spend? Right. Is it better to spend 5 minutes of drudgery every day rather than carve out 2 or 3 hours to learn something that will eliminate that 5 minutes? You can do the math about how long it'll be before you start saving time and how much time you'll save over the course of years. But in the end, you still got to find 3 hours where you don't do anything productive, right?
Right. But I think at the same time, there is also a satisfaction from then solving that problem.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
That's the part for me that I find the most interesting is definitely, you're right, there's an analysis you can do here. You know, both of us have, you know, MBAs who could probably do that analysis for us. But I, you know, there's an analysis, but it's also the intangible aspect of solving a problem. And part of the reason that I liked, you know, in my prior career as a programmer, that I liked that aspect of it was, you know, you feel like you have accomplished something and there is a satisfaction to it. And I think that's, you know, intangible, but also worth factoring into it, because it is like, haha, I have conquered you, computer, and now you will do my bidding, as you shall, robot. And that's not nothing. You're right that there are other factors that enter into it, but I feel like the reason I open up that project and bang away at it again every, you know, month or two is just like, I'm just gonna feel so good once I've solved this problem, even if it ends up not really saving me that much time.
Right, then you end up with that, you know, sometimes you do these things because of the sense of accomplishment, not because it actually saves you time, just because you feel good about it.
Yeah, like washing dishes. No, or, you know, just because then I can write an article about it too. So, you know, then I feel like, hey, not only have I accomplished something, but I get to write an article about it, which is accomplishing something else. So, you know, there's reasons. There's reasons, is what I'm saying.
Oh, to live our lives.
No one should.
For those who are curious, my son came home in the middle of that. But we didn't stop. We kept on rolling, man.
We're professionals.
I just used
That's
the mute
fine.
Button, and I listened to you out of one ear, and opened the garage door, and the whole thing.
Ten years of professionalism from me, Jason. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you mentioned that. It's 10 years that you've been what you would consider a professional writer.
That I've exchanged words for money is the way I like to think of it.
As your primary way you make a living.
Yes, indeed. Which is kind of funny. I was thinking about it. It was the end of February, and I dug up, even thanks to the Internet Wayback Machine, you can dig up my very first post on the Mac User blog back in 2006. Possibly the idea that 2006 is 10 years ago is a little staggering to me, but hey, time waits for no man. But I was thinking back to those, my experience. I think I've, you know, obviously told the story of how I started out a few other podcasts, but, you know, among other things, thinking back to the fact that when I first started writing for Mac User, I think my first rate was $7 a post.
Yeah, we totally exploited you.
Yeah, well, first of all, you originally told me you were going to pay me $5, and I was like, okay, that seems fine. Yeah. And I talked myself into $7, or I was good enough, I guess, that at the end of the month, you were like, oh, we'll pay you $7.
Oh, yeah,
we'll
give you a raise. We'll give you a raise to $7.
And, of course, my other favorite part of that is that you're like, well, I'm like, well, how many posts can I write? And you're like, I don't know, 100. Like, I think you more or less pulled that out of the air.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, great, I'm going to write 100 posts in a month. And I did that.
You did?
It was, it was a certain amount of trial by fire. I think a lot of people who are, you know, around my age probably started out in a very similar way to that, at least in the tech writing industry. I know a lot of other folks who started out writing the super low cost, you know.
It was the style at the time, essentially.
Yeah, the content farm type thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people who've gone on to much better things. I think Christina Warren, right, started out at the unofficial Apple weblog, I believe.
Yeah, you know, our buddy, Lex Friedman, you know, he was writing like $15 or four, maybe they were more, maybe they were like $25 app reviews for Phil Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
At Macworld. That's how he started writing for Macworld. And I remember him saying, I got this guy. He's pretty good. You could try him out on other things. It's Lex Friedman. And I said, no, never. And that was the end of Lex Friedman. We was never heard from again. That was the style of the time. It was like, oh, blogging. Everybody needs to have blogging. And you just get people who are on the internet and they dash off posts for cheap. But you make it up in volume. And, you know, and part of the calculation, I think, was always the idea that you would find... That would be a way that you would find people. That was like your way, because you know this. You started out as the blogger, but you ended up being the manager of bloggers for a long time.
Yep.
It turns out that like the basic step one of write for us and like first show up.
Yep.
I got to even back it up further. There's so many steps that you just take as a given that are not there. First, it's you say you're interested and we say, okay, why don't we try you out? And there's no response. So then if they respond, you give them an assignment and there's no response. And if they do that assignment, then is it any good or not? That's a reasonable thing.
Heck, is it written in, you know, sentences?
Yes,
like, it doesn't even have to be like stylistically fantastic. Is it cogent, understandable English?
Is it coherent enough to be made readable even
right.
it doesn't even have to be readable. So you get all the way through there, and then there's like, all right, you are capable of stringing a sentence together, we would like you to write a few posts every week. And that's another milestone where a lot of people just vanish. They're like, they're not committed to doing the work. And so I guess what I'm saying is the $7 a post thing, as you learned as you went along, was effective in finding, we found some good writers. You know, we did find Lex coming through the app review route, and we found you, and we found Serenity. You know, we found some people who were, who came in through that route, but it was also true that it was kind of good in the sense that you very quickly got an idea on something that had very little cost, and very little damage to you if they failed you, if people were reliable and capable.
Low risk, and that for sure was a big part of it. And I mean, and then it became very clear, I think, to you guys, especially when I was starting out, that it's like, all right, this person will do all of those things. Then you know, I started getting more work, right? Mm-hmm. Like Dan Frakes asked me to review a bunch of iPod cases. Oh my God, that was a nightmare assignment. I did that for a long time. My goal was to be a professional writer. So I was, you know, the like you said, the most important thing was always buckling down and doing the work. And a lot of people think like, well, it's so hard to just even get your foot in the door. And for me, it was not difficult to get the foot in the door. It was more just like, once you're in the door, you know, staying there or like making it to the point where people are like, oh, this person is a professional. I think the bigger part of professional writer is professional, not writer. You know, as it turns out, writing skills vary widely. But like if you are professional and do your work in a timely manner, that will get you more jobs than even if you're like, you know, maybe not as good a writer, or even if you're a great writer. And if you aren't professional, like, yeah, it's still going to be pretty tough to give you work, because if you don't turn it around in time, then you're useless, you know, especially in the field that we were in anyways. So, you know, that's sort of like the overall thing I think I learned from that first year of freelancing was do your job and the rest of it is kind of less material. So ten years later, here we are.
Yeah, it's funny. The Yeah, people, it's less mysterious. It's not to say that everyone can do it, because writing is hard, and trying to put, you know, you've got to put in the time, and you've got to have the kind of mental energy, and you've got to be able to write, and you've got to be able to communicate things about, in our case, about technology to an audience and have them understand it and maybe be entertained by it. So it's not like it's easy. It is hard.
Right. Sure.
But on another level, it's not like, I always got the sense, and this is probably true, that for a wannabe screenwriter or novelist, right, or especially like an actor or something like that, that you have these areas where there are way more people who can do it than there are jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Just way more people, and not like want to do it, but like are capable of doing it. And I get that sense with something like, there are probably more people who can write a good screenplay. Maybe not a great, and maybe this isn't true, but like are capable of writing a good screenplay than there are ever going to be the ability, you know, to produce that many screenplays or buy that many screenplays. Or
think of how many screenplays by great writers never make it, right? Like just
right.
Because there isn't the resources or people's not interested, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. Or maybe it's that, you know, there are so many people who are good actors. And the fact is, there are only, even with 400 TV shows on TV this year, there are still only so many jobs for actors. And so what I'm saying is, that may or may not be true, but certainly I feel like it's not true for technology. Even there are so many different places out there where people are writing about technology now, and probably too many. And there are a lot of people out there who are capable tech writers. But if anything in the trenches, anything that I was taught in the trenches, recruiting writers to write for Macworld, I learned very quickly that you spot the people who have these traits, and you're spotting them out of a wall of people who don't, right? Who even basic, it's not like, it's like, wow, we have to look for people who have this very specific trait, because that's the only way we're going to be able to filter them out. No, it's like, can you write things that people can read, and will you show up and not disappear, and can you work at a normal pace? And that washed out almost everybody.
Yep. No, absolutely. I agree. I mean, and there were a lot of people that I resigned myself to being like, hey, I might need to do a little bit of punch-up work on this person in order to turn this into a post, as is the case anytime you're an editor. You know, it's like there's always going to be some punch-up. I know from my own experiences, all of my editors always spent time punching up the work, right? But the question is it going to be worth my time, right? And then, is that a person who shows up regularly and turns stuff in? And the answer is, you know, that sort of balance. We're talking about that sort of same sort of thing we were just talking about with automation, right? Like, okay, I'm still might have to invest a little bit of time in turning this person's posts around, but they're showing up every day, week, whatever, and turning in the requisite number of things, and it doesn't require that much time for me to like put this into a usable shape. Well, that's gold as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Like that is worth the whatever trade-offs I'm making.
Yep. Yep. So, hey, happy 10 years, Dan.
Hey, thank you. It's been an educational 10 years. I am looking forward to starting a new chapter in my professional writing career, as it were.
Are you retiring? What's
yep,
happening?
It's I'm putting my number up on the wall, Jason.
All right. What's your number? I don't even know is it 10?
Probably 23.
Okay.
Probably 23.
All right.
But yeah, no, I'm
goodbye.
Not going anywhere. I got some time.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm gonna make it to 20. I gotta get my my free dinner.
Well, some people, yeah, free. You're free. Who gives that to you?
I don't know.
The writing guild.
The writing gods.
The writing gods. That's right. You're soon bodily into heaven for dinner, and then they just drop you back out on earth.
Yeah, the fairy godmother of writing shows up and buys you a hamburger or whatever.
Yeah, people, I mean, without getting into it much more, I mean, what you're saying, we've been talking about for a while. Like, I've written a few novels that are still in a drawer, having not been rewritten, and you've been writing novels for longer than I have. And, you know, I think that's definitely a serious hope of yours. You have an agent. I think that is the hope, that you will be able to start a new, you know, find a new date, hopefully in 2016, where you can say that this is where I'll start counting of being somebody who got paid to be a fiction writer.
Yeah, and
be a novelist.
It's definitely a goal of mine, and it has been, I think, even before I started thinking about being a technology writer. And I think the same thing goes there that I was saying about being a technology writer, which was the most important thing is to do the work. Because there are a lot of aspiring novelists out there. And the answer is, if you never finish a book, then, and I didn't for a long time. So the answer is, if you never finish a book, it's never going to get published. Like, it's just, it's impossible. You know, unless you are, there are people who get, you know, we know some people who have gotten books published based on, you know, a chunk of it, but you got to be very, very good. And you still got to finish it eventually, or else they will, you know, retract whatever favors they have done for you.
Yeah.
So the answer is do the work.
It's like The Godfather.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It is. In fact, it's funny. Since this is the secret podcast behind the scenes, is I've actually tried to block off time using you as an inspiration, actually. Block off time during my week where I can work on revising one of my novels so mm-hmm. that I can. I had a Hugo Award nominee read it for me. I paid him to give me a critique, which was great. Because, you know, you give it to your friends and, you and I have friends who are editors and are going to, you know, maybe bring out the surgical tools a little bit more than your family, who would be like, it's great, Dan.
Yeah. I put it all in the fridge.
But when, yeah. My fridge 300 is covered pages. Covered in paper now. No, you gave it to me on that disc. I used a magnet to attach it to the fridge. I hope that wasn't a problem. So, but that was good because he is a published novelist who was nominated for major awards and is a creative writing teacher. And it was really good to get some solid feedback there and actionable feedback about what to do to make the draft better. And I haven't had time to do it because I've been doing, you know, launching an independent website and a podcast network and all these other things. So what I decided to do is put a couple of hours on my calendar. People who listen to the Upgrade podcast will know that one of my organizational systems is to put things on a calendar and say, hey, you should probably write that article right about now. Just as a spur to me to take that time, a little bit like taking the 3 hours to learn how to do build an automation mm-hmm. task.
Sure.
I have a recurring event in my calendar for working on the novel now for, you know, it's like 2 or 3 hours, one day a week, just trying to stake out some time because otherwise I'm never going to do it. And I really would like to, even if I never sell it, even if it never gets published, I would like to at least take it through the process of being a place where I'm much happier with it and I feel like it's much better than a first draft can be. And then, you know, if it never goes anywhere after that, so be it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, even if it doesn't, I mean, which it might not, I mean, as you know, because you read them, I wrote several other novels before I wrote the one that I eventually got representation on.
Yeah.
So you got to be prepared for that eventuality. And you also, the hardest part, honestly, is you got to not be discouraged when that one doesn't work out, right? Like, yep, you can spend forever revising one too, which is great. And you want to get it into a shape that it's, you know, something that you can maybe try to, you know, submit somewhere. But if eventually that doesn't pan out, you got to move on to the next thing, and you got to not get discouraged by the fact that it didn't work out, because most of them don't, right? Like, that's the thing. Most even successful writers, many of them have, you know, books that didn't go anywhere first. So
yeah,
you gotta be prepared for that eventuality, and you got to be willing to put the work in and keep going. And that's the hardest thing, honestly, is being prepared to say, all right, I invested years of my life in writing this thing. I'm going to stick it in a drawer and I'm going to start something new.
Yeah. It's, honestly, one of the reasons that I want to finish this novel that I'm revising is that the first thing I wrote, which at this point is like 10 years old, the first novel I wrote. I wrote a bunch of short stories and stuff when I was in school, but the first novel I wrote, I keep coming back to the ideas in it and some of the characters, and I figure probably what I need to do is write that again, just write it again. Do it, mm-hmm. do it again, not even rewrite it, like just redo it again.
Yep.
Knowing what I know now, having been through 3 novel writing processes instead of 0, and do a better job at it. And the fact that it still sticks in my mind is really exciting, because that means that, you know, it's, I feel like there's something there that
might have some legs.
Certainly, yeah, has captured my attention. And so one of the reasons that I want to kind of get through this third one and do a rewrite on it is, yeah, I think it can be much better and maybe a fun, entertaining book. But I also want to be able to sort of lay it in the ground regardless and say, I'm done with you. I've done all I can. I'm going to move on. And mm-hmm. then I can revisit that first thing, or I can do something else entirely. But I feel like I need to get there. It's funny. I was just rereading series of books that you recommended to me and that you love, the Vorkosigan books by Lois McMaster Bujold.
Yeah, my favorites.
And the latest one, which we both read, is goes back to essentially the main character in the first two books. And this is like book 17. And it's been those first books were written in the early 80s. So it's kind of funny to see how the author has kind of come back around to that character at a much later stage.
And as much time has elapsed sort of in the books too as in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's but what struck me, and it's definitely a callback to the first couple of books. It's set on the same planet as the first book begins. Yeah. And it's all, if this was the last book that she wrote in this universe, it would be such a perfect coda in that way. But what I was thinking about it is that she wrote, she got her book contract on her third novel.
Yeah.
And she ultimately, I believe, published the other two novels.
Right. Right.
And
once she sort of made a name for herself.
Yeah. She kind of did it, but it was the third one that she wrote that was the one that got her the deal, and that was how it happened. So, and there are lots of stories like that of people who wrote and wrote and wrote, and those early novels maybe came out later, like Gillian Flynn, who wrote Gone Girl, who interviewed, this is my Glenning, interviewed me for about 5 minutes in the 90s because we did a parody website of for tv.org that people thought was really funny, and she interviewed me about it and you know, wrote 50 words about it or whatever, 200 words about it in 1998. But since then I followed her career because I think it's interesting. And then she wrote Gone Girl and it became this huge thing. But within months of Gone Girl becoming a huge smash, her two novels that had been in a drawer somewhere were published in hardcover. And I just thought that was really funny, but that kind of thing can happen. She had novels in a drawer. This was not Gone Girl was not her first novel. And I think the impression I get is if you read her other novels, you can kind of tell that they're not as polished as Gone Girl because she wasn't, you know, she was working on her craft at that point.
Right. And even if you go back and like, oh, I'm going to, you know, sort of rewrite this a little bit, punch it up a little bit. Like it's structurally speaking, it's like, it's, you know, kind of like refurbing, you know, putting a new coat of paint on your house. Right. Like, yeah, you're maybe going to turn that into a shape that's worth publishing, but people are going to be able to look at sort of the bones of it and realize that's still not quite, that's a previous book.
Yeah, not as accomplished.
Yeah. Jason, well, I feel like we could talk about writing all the time.
Yeah, I know too. I know. We've talked about doing our podcast about writing, but who has the time to do podcasts?
I mean, there's too much writing and too many podcasts.
Yeah, I know. Exactly right. One of these days, that'll happen.
We'll just live stream as we're writing.
Yeah.
We'll just live stream.
There'll be a lot of clicky. That's the
a lot of swearing, a lot of clicking. Yeah, a lot of keyboard.
A lot of clicky. Clicky podcast. All right. Well, so I think that's a nice nice little conversation for this week for all the subscribers.
Enjoy, subscribers.
We'll be back next week. The week after that, I'm in Yosemite. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do. I might like have a conversation with somebody in Yosemite and then send that off as a little bonus, or we might skip that week. I don't know, but because I won't be around. And then the week after that, there's probably an Apple event.
So many things going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. It's March now. We have to start working on what we're going to put in the Six Colors magazine this month. So we should probably work on that too. Good little reminder. Put a pin in that one. Put it in the parking lot. We're also working on a subscriber page. We're much closer now to having a page where you can log in and see all the back issues and the URL of this podcast feed that you don't need because you already are listening. So hopefully that'll also happen in the next few weeks. So anyway, thanks to everybody out there. And hey, Dan, talk to you later.
Bye, Jason.